Hello, everyone. My name is Caleb Walgren, and you're listening to Season 5, Episode 23 of Brody Sports Talk, Clash of the Brodies. My name, as I said earlier, is Caleb Walgren, and I am joined by my co-host, who applied for ownership of the Denver Broncos, but he's still waiting to hear back, and that is Derek Rusnick. Derek, how are you doing today?
Yeah, the Dolphins won't return my phone calls because they clearly own the Broncos still from a few weeks back by putting up 70 on them. I am doing well. Hello to everyone out there in podcast land. I'm so glad to be coming to you today. And just a good high five to your ear holes today. And I appreciate you.
Absolutely. Well, we've got a lot of great things to talk about today. Just to give a quick rundown of what is on the plate today, we've got some Brody Spotlights, our Goats of the Week. We're going to do a Brody Sports six-pack with thoughts about the NFL season, our Thursday Night Football preview, and last but not least, we will have some beautiful dessert with our Brody Bets. So first things first, Derek, let's jump into our Spotlights. I want to let you take the reins on this one first. Who is your spotlight this week?
Okay, so this coming up draft in 2024, if everything plays out the way it currently plays out, the Chicago Bears will have the top two picks in the draft. They'll have the number one and the number two because they traded with the Panthers when the Panthers picked first overall to get Bryce Young. The last team to do that, which went out there and got the number two and number three, if I'm not mistaken, was the Houston Texans. So beyond that, when the Texans went out and got C.J. Stroud and Will Anderson Jr., they went out and got a new head coach. And they said, okay, Let's start winning football games. Let's go out here and succeed at the game of football. Well, they succeeded in the game of football by taking D'Amico Ryans from the San Francisco 49ers. The Texans are 3-3 right now, right in the mix of the AFC South. They're one game back of the Jaguars, and they have the biggest point differential in the AFC South at plus 22. So they have scored 135 points and given up 113. They also have the fewest points scored in the division with a defensive-minded head coach. All of a sudden, the Texans have flipped the script as they have looked horrible the last couple of years. But I honestly think that they have found a new head coach. They have found their quarterback of the future. And I think one of the best moves that has happened this last offseason was the Houston Texans finding what my hope is going to be a long-term head coach. I want the Texans to succeed, and I love his style of defense when it comes to, okay, you can run your offense, but we're going to stop you. He knows what's coming before it gets there. A lot of times he played for this team in his NFL career. Everything is just culminating together to have a really good rookie head coach season for D'Amico Ryans. And I just want to put a spotlight on him. He's doing a great job. And honestly, in the next 5 years, we could see a Jaguars, Texans, maybe even a Colts, all fighting for that the top of the division like we see in the NFC West most years. So a hat tip to D'Amico Ryans as and the GM down there, as I think they made a good decision.
I completely agree with you here, Derek. I think that what the Texans are doing is pretty remarkable. I think that we looked at them and kind of like I said, pre-pod, but I've got the Texans down. They've got a 3-3 record. Their over under win total before the season was 6.5. And I think we're both fairly skeptical of that. You know, the fact that right now they are at least near playoff positioning is pretty remarkable. You look at what they've done. CJ Stroud has 9 touchdowns and only 1 interception. That's fantastic. That's great coaching around him. And then you mentioned Will Anderson. I did double check. He only currently has 1 sack on the season, but he leads the team with 8 quarterback hits. You and I both know, Derek, that sometimes it is getting the quarterback down, and sometimes it is getting the pressure on the quarterback and making them have a bad throw. Will Anderson is making a difference, even though both of these two players, the anchors of the team of the future, are 22 years old. Let's imagine, kind of like you said, if 5 years from now, and when they're in their prime, they could be in the prime of the league potentially. So I love what they're doing. It looks like it's going well. If I doubted them, which I did doubt them quite a bit this year before the season, they're backing it up. So I want to give them some kudos for being able to do that.
Before we move on, I just want to say I have high hopes for them. I'm not saying they're going to win a Super Bowl this year. But what I am like, don't come back and at me because the Texans all of a sudden get to, you know, an 8-9 season or a 5-11 season because for whatever, you know, things happen like that. The Texans are a talented team, but they're not the cream of the crop. So things are looking up for them, but at the same time, I don't expect a Super Bowl this year.
Which is smart. You know, I think that we have to have reasonable expectations. And I'll just go ahead and take some of that and go into my take, Derek, because
go ahead.
I think that in general, a lot of times you look at weeks and you circle games, and we both do it here on the podcast every now and again where we go, oh yeah, this team's probably going to win that. This team's going to win that. And things just feel very kind of cut and dry as far as where we expect teams to land. And then there's weeks like this past week where you go, oh, that didn't go the way that we thought it was going to go at all. I like to call those things like chaos week. And it's why we play the game. It's why you go out and settle it on the field. And we started seeing some of that in college football this weekend. When I tuned in and saw that Notre Dame was up 24-3 on USC, I was like, wait, what on earth is happening here? You know, I wasn't surprised that Notre Dame had 24. I was surprised that USC had 3. That it was a very low scoring affair for them. Pittsburgh, of course, went out and crushed Louisville at home 38-21. Washington State was a top 20 team and lost 44-6 against Arizona out of nowhere. And then I know we'll talk about this in the Brody bets, but some updates at the bottom of the top 25 where Oklahoma State managed to shock Kansas 39-32. And then Mizzou upset Kentucky, who'd been doing really well up until that point in the season, 38-21. And Missouri's now 6-1, 2-1 in the SEC. And it's like, wait, what is happening here? Then just to go ahead, let's talk about Sunday. You know, all of a sudden, Justin Fields got knocked out of the game. The Vikings and the Bears game are a low-scoring affair. The 49ers can't get things done after Debo Samuel gets banged up. And the Browns find a way to get a win with some field goal kicks. And, you know, as well, in the afternoon, the Jets found a way to pick off Jalen Hurts a bunch of times and pull an upset over the Eagles. Like, even Sunday night football with the Bills looking like they were still in London for half of the game before they showed up in the fourth quarter to put the Giants away. None of the things that were going the way that we exactly expected them to go this past week. It is a game-by-game season. It is a matchup-by-matchup season. I cannot stress that enough. But it is also one of those things where before you jump too far ahead, it's always worth it to just pause, take a look, and go, okay, I can see what's happening with this one. It's going to take time. There's a chaos week now. There's probably going to be another one in November where all sorts of things are just going and you're like, what on earth just happened? And we'll, I don't know if I'll bring it up then, but there's a reason they play the games and it's for fun and because anything can happen. Any comments, Derek, or anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, so I heard a stat earlier this week talking about Chaos Week, and I want to bring it back to Arizona. So Arizona has played Washington, they've played USC, and they've played Washington State. So Washington has Michael Penix Jr., USC has Caleb Williams, and Washington State has Cam Ward. Of those three guys added together, do you know how many touchdown passes all three of those guys added together have versus Arizona this year?
I don't know. I'm going to say five.
One. Cam Ward had zero touchdowns in his game versus the Wildcats this weekend. Michael Penix Jr. did not have a touchdown pass when they played Washington. Caleb Williams had one touchdown pass when they played USC. Arizona shuts down really great quarterbacks and makes them look silly. Now, Arizona doesn't win the games versus Washington or USC, though they took USC to three overtimes and finally pulled it out versus Washington State. That's how much chaos there was. You think, oh, okay, there's this or that or whatever is, these teams are just going to steamroll through stuff. A team that no one saw coming has stopped the top three quarterbacks in the Pac-12 and kept them to one touchdown pass in the three games that they've played. This is why we played the game, because on paper, all three of those teams are significantly better than Arizona. And yet here we are with Arizona beating Washington State. It's so funny to me how in college football, and I'm just using that as an example, we have teams going to different conferences next year. A lot of the Big 12, the Pac-12 teams are coming to the Big 12. We've got four of the Pac-12 going to the Big 10. And this year, all of a sudden, we're seeing teams that, might have been blue bloods at the early 2000s. We're seeing OU back up there. We're seeing Florida State back up there. Alabama is kind of struggling this year. They've had a couple of games that were tough. I mean, we're looking at some real different play this type of year. And this last weekend, just a little bit of chaos with the Niners and the Eagles. I did not see the Eagles Jets going the way that it did. I was just waiting for the Eagles to wake up and hit the gas pedal and get going. This last weekend was just a little bit of crazy.
It definitely sounds like it was a little bit of crazy. Derek, you were giving me the stats about Arizona's defense. I had to look something up. So Arizona's defensive coordinator actually played his college football at Washington State.
Yeah.
Johnny Nansen. And I am so intrigued by his career as a coach because he played linebacker, but he ended up being like a running backs coach, a defensive backs coach, and a couple of places where he went in college, granted both at Washington and USC. He's actually been out in the Pac-12 quite a bit. He was a running back special team and associate head coach before going to linebackers and being a DC. Like, I would love to see this guy get a shot. He's Samoan. He's about 50 years old now. And it seems like he's just been grinding away at this for a long time. And if you can shut those three guys down, your name needs to be known in more places. So I'm happy that you brought that up. Thank you, Derek. Thank you for enhancing my knowledge.
Yeah. So can I enhance your knowledge on something else that's happened this week?
You can, even if it has to do with a school that's got a nickname after an Avenger who likes to shoot a bow and arrow.
That's very true. So this last week, the attendance record for a women's college basketball game was absolutely shattered. So the new attendance record is 55,646 fans attended a women's college basketball game. And this was Iowa versus DePaul in a charity exhibition game at Kinnick Stadium, where the Hawkeye football team plays. So there was the previous record was set back in 2002, and it was 29,619. And that was the national championship game between UConn and Oklahoma in San Antonio. So you can see 29 and then 55,646. So unless Nebraska or Michigan, I'm trying to remember who has a bigger stadium than Iowa. Like, I know there's Big Ten. Unless they put them in the middle of the field and play basketball, I'm that's going to stand for probably a while. We've heard of a couple of different sports using the football stadium. I know that Nebraska had the volleyball in their stadium, went really well as in an exhibition. And just for all those people who are wondering, of course, with Iowa comes Caitlin Clark, and she had a 34-point triple-double in the game as Iowa defeated DePaul 94-71. I just want a big shout out to everybody who came to that game, who was a part of that game, as I really do think that women's college basketball and the WNBA need more eyes on the sport. I think it's a really good sport. I think it's really it's something that we could see grow very quickly in the future. I know that I've been trying to catch as much as I can of the WNBA finals between the Liberty of New York and the Aces of Las Vegas. And I think that the level of play is certainly coming up to a new level. So the next rising star certainly had some eyes on her this last week.
Yeah, I'm double checking here, Derek. It looks like tip-off for the regular season is going to be on November 6th for women's college basketball. And as I'm looking through some of that real quick, there's already set to be some fantastic day one games, including apparently Notre Dame is playing South Carolina in Paris to start the season. Two top 10 teams, like, that sounds like an awesome place to be. And also LSU will be playing that opening day against Colorado. Deion Sanders might be there because it is a Monday, but it is at LSU. So that, yes. Well, actually it's going to be in Vegas because it's at it's a tip-off tournament, but can't come soon enough. Definitely a lot of fun things to see and to support in the world of women's sports right now. So thank you for sharing that, Derek. I saw that happening at Kinnick Stadium over the weekend. I didn't see if they did like the turnaround and wave to the kids at the Children's Hospital after
they
the
did.
First
they did the wave.
Quarter. Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
The important things. So I'm glad that happened. And the fact that they were able to get that done while Iowa went and took care of business up in Wisconsin, I think it made Iowa fans' weekend really happy, and Nebraska was just happy to be on a bye. So, Derek, you know, not all fields are made of grass, but one animal that does eat a lot of grass is a goat. Derek, who is your goat of the week?
Okay, so to all of our listeners out there, I have brought you three negative goats in a row, and this week I am going to bring you not only a positive goat, but in recompense, I'm going to bring you a goat from the Raiders. I hate the Raiders, but Max Crosby is a goat. So the they had a, I want to say it was 17 to, where did my stuff go?
It was 21-17 was the final.
Yeah, so no, it was 19-17. And the Patriots have the ball. You're expecting the Patriots to be able to march down the field and at least get into field goal range to win the game by one. The Patriots took over at their 9-yard line with about 2.5 minutes left in the game. Didn't have any timeouts, but, you know, this is still the NFL. So Mac Jones throws the ball down. Devontae Parker, you know, you expect him to catch the ball, but he drops it. And you're like, okay, third down, let's get the, you know, let's get the 10 to get, you know, to get back on track. Third down, Jones was sacked in the end zone by Max Crosby for a safety. So that pushes the lead out to 21-17. So that field goal is taken off the board for winning the game. And the Patriots go on to lose. A lot of times you see a pick six or an interception be the thing that seals a win for a team or whatnot. This was something that was completely different and completely changes the momentum of the game or where you're thinking about what you're needing. Max Crosby goes out here and just like, I'm just going to tackle this guy in the end zone. I'm going to get 2 points for my team. And let's put the Patriots kind of stomp on their throat as some Detroit-based coaches might use in saying, just put them away. Don't allow them to expect to come back. So you call the guy's number. He does it. And Max Crosby is my goat this week.
I like it. I like where you're coming from here. Well, I'm going to go ahead and give my goat of the week to a player who was able to put up 18 points this past week, and that is Justin Tucker, as I feel like he continues to set up his Hall of Fame case. He went 6 of 6 for field goals, and he actually did miss his rare extra point in the Baltimore Ravens win over the Tennessee Titans over in London. If there's one thing that you know will impress them across the pond, it is a player who knows how to kick a ball really well. And so I'm sure that the London fans really loved getting to see the legendary Justin Tucker come out there and take care of business. And Derek, I just once again am pausing for a second and coming back and saying, Justin Tucker has a case to be made for the Hall of Fame. I think that he is going to be a true Hall of Fame kicker. He already has been first team All Pro as a kicker 5 times in his NFL career, which is more than anyone else ever has, including Hall of Famers and Morton Anderson and Jan Sternud. And we all know that Adam Vinatieri just hasn't had his eligibility open up yet. Vinatieri's getting in. Too many legendary kicks for him not to be there, especially early in his career with the Patriots, and then just the longevity. I know that in general it's tough because Justin Tucker doesn't have the longevity right now. Even if I look at his career points, because he's only been in the league since 2012, he only has 1,547 points, which sounds like quite a bit. But that's not even in the top 20 all time. So we need to get him out there, need him to kick some more field goals. Maybe every time the Ravens get into field goal range, Harbaugh can just like have Lamar take a knee, let's get Justin Tucker out there and get a guaranteed 3 points. I mean, let's face it, it worked as a game plan-esque type thing this past week against the Tennessee Titans. Trust your defense, trust Justin Tucker. You can get the job done. And yeah, I just am excited that he's done so well for so long and we can still celebrate the legend that is Justin Tucker.
So, Caleb, I know that you are our resident soccer person between us. I don't think you really care about the kids in England. Did you see how many were crying every time he kicked a field goal? Because soccer fans aren't used to the ball going over the goalpost, the crossbar, and kids thought he didn't do things correctly. So they just bawling, just this tears probably filled the streets of London because the ball kept going over the crossbar, and they don't like that in England.
That's true. Normally, if it goes over the crossbar, you did something wrong.
Yeah.
But in the NFL, it means you're doing something right. And it's fun. It's fun. Sometimes I wonder what Justin Tucker would look like if he was trying to go out there and be a right winger on a Premier League team, getting down the field, putting a cross in front of the net, because you know that his accuracy would be there time and time again. Uncontested accuracy of Justin Tucker.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And of course, for our listeners, I was just joking. There were no tears from the kids, at least that I saw. But there was some very good kicking. I did see that in that out there.
So, Derek, let's go ahead and grab our lawn chairs. You know, it's fall. It's felt a little bit fallish the last couple of days here in Oklahoma because we are an Oklahoma-based podcast. And let's grab a six-pack of your beverage of choice. And I know, even though we record this late at night, I've got some Mountain Dews here. Derek, I don't know if you have anything that you're going to drink, but we're six weeks through the NFL season. And let's just go ahead and give some different thoughts on how the season is going so far and what we're kind of enjoying, kind of to you know, check the temperature, if you will.
Yeah, so I didn't realize you were going for strong stuff tonight with Mountain Dew. I got to bring that energy now. I do have my my six bottles of water with me, as I have to be hydrated for this. So I'm just going to jump into my first one, and I'm calling it JETS, Time to Bets. So at the beginning of this year, all off season, the Jets were, after they acquired Aaron Rodgers, the whole story was they're going to make the playoffs. They're going to make a deep playoff run. They could even be Super Bowl contenders because they were one player away from being a complete team. Four plays into their season, everything falls apart. Aaron Rodgers goes down. Is probably lost for the season, though the way he was throwing the other day, he may be back sooner than later. I don't know how he's doing it. But we look up one-third of the way through the season. The Jets are 3-3. They just beat a previously undefeated Eagles team, and they didn't just defeat them. They made them look silly. That defense for the Jets is absolutely stout. The Jets didn't have their three best defensive players this year, or this last week, and still made Jalen Hurts question everywhere he was throwing the ball. Zach Wilson really does look like he could be a pretty decent game manager, getting the ball out to Garrett Wilson, getting and turning around, handing it over to Breece Hall. Breece Hall is an amazing running back. I've watched him for several years now, and I'm glad that he's back and running the ball well. If they all of a sudden like pull together as a team and say, "Hey, we can actually make some noise," The Jets can be a really difficult team this year. You know, they've got a division that, honestly, they're probably the second best team in that division, tied maybe with the Buffalo Bills. They've already beaten the Buffalo Bills once. They beat Denver by 10. And then they like I said, they beat Philly just this last week. And their schedule looks pretty decent. They have the Giants, the Chargers, and the Raiders. And then the rest of the year, they have games against the Falcons, games against the Texans, games against the Browns, which that Browns game is going to be defense on defense, probably. And so there's some very winnable games there. And so I'm not saying they're going to go to the Super Bowl, but they could honestly make a playoff push, and we could not have said that after week one.
I think it's really interesting, Derek, because this does seem like a team that is finding its place and its identity. They have, you know, like you said, gotten to that 3-3 record. I think, I mean, even with some of the injuries they've had on defense, the fact that they were able to get so many takeaways against Jalen Hurts this past week just means that, you know, that Robert Saleh is out there calling great defense and doing his thing. I think it's going to come down to some of the basics of how effective are they in the red zone? How well do they actually get the job done? But let's face it, we watched that game where they put up a fight against the Chiefs in that second half. They almost came back and knocked off the Chiefs too. The only game that they really got destroyed this year was Zach Wilson's first start because they were on short rest from Monday night and they were playing at Dallas, and Dallas was healthy and very tough to mess with in that game. So in general, I think that the Jets are a bit of a matchup enigma and a matchup nightmare for teams, because if they're doing things the way that they want, they're going to be able to get Breece Hall out there and pound the rock and be able to just be effective at what they do with Breece Hall, because he is a phenomenal running back. They're going to be able to, you know, get Zach Wilson to have the right amount of targets. You don't want him to pass too many times, but you want him to have the right amount of effectiveness. Garrett Wilson is a X factor at receiver. And the defense is good. It's so good. And it's just very interesting to see what all will happen. I feel like they're living a little bit by the turnover. And let's face it, I think that that might be the best plan for the Jets. If you can live by the turnover, get the short field, pound it in the red zone, and pound it into the end zone, have good old reliable Zerline back there kicking for you. I think that while the hype was high before the season, I think we might be a little bit too quick to be writing them off. I've also heard random rumblings as well, Derek, that said that Rodgers might be back by week 12.
That's crazy.
Like, if he's somehow back for the first game against the Dolphins on Black Friday, sign me up for the Jets doing this. Because like you said, the four games before that, after the bye, are at the Giants, which is really a home game, the Chargers, at the Raiders, and at the Bills. And then if Rodgers came back, they'd have three straight games at home. And I just really believe that they could be super hot and super dangerous throughout all of that. There's no one that you look at either and say, oh, well, they're totally a matchup issue for the Jets. The Jets are the matchup issue. They, you know, you don't have people that play defense quite the same way the Jets do with players like Sauce on the outside when he's healthy. So I like it. I like the Jets. I like where you're coming from here, Derek.
Yeah, no, it's We knew that they were a quarterback away, but, you know, that quarterback doesn't change the entire of the team. That defense was going to be stout no matter what, and it just looks like they did not drop they did not get upset over, okay, well, we're going to have to go win the game. So that defense is ready to go.
So, Derek, my first point that I want to open up here in this six pack is that parity is alive and well in the NFL today. So what I mean by that is I'm looking throughout the league and it's really a bit of chaos. There's a lot of chaos going on throughout the league. There's a lot of different things that maybe we didn't all expect to see happening throughout the season. And it's just really kind of fun and interesting to see and embrace what is actually happening here. So, yes, last year's Super Bowl teams in the Chiefs and the Eagles, who had the best records in their divisions last year, are out to a good start again. Okay, the top is still really good. The Bears were the worst team in football. They do have a win this year. Thank you, Commanders, for existing. The Panthers, who traded up and took with the first pick, even though they won seven games last year, are struggling under a new head coach. But when you see things like the Detroit Lions are 5-1, and in that same division, the Minnesota Vikings are 2-4. I mean, the Vikings lost four games all of last regular season. I don't think that while I was probably quick to say I think that the Vikings are going to fall back, I don't know that I thought they were going to fall back as hard as they have, and losing Justin Jefferson also makes that harder. The Bengals are 3-3. They also only lost four games all of last year. Like, we're talking about a team that in order to have a record like last year would have to go out and win 10 out of the next 11 weeks. Like, that's ridiculous. The AFC North is a very competitive division once again, and who knows what's going to happen there. The Texans, with their win on Sunday, I know you already talked about them, they have as many wins as they had last year. You know, they finished with a record of 3-13-1 last year, and they already have three wins. Heck, the Colts have three wins, and they only had four all of last year. Maybe it helps to not have Jeff Saturday be your head coach. That was a little bit harsh, probably. But yeah, there's just a lot of parity. Yes, there's some teams that you expect, but there's some other teams like the Giants were a playoff team last year. They're 1-5. They're struggling. Even like I said, with the Vikings, they were a playoff team last year. And then Tampa currently would be, because of their bye, the front runner in the NFC South. But yes, they won that division last year. But I think that I definitely wrote them off a lot more than seeing them in the front driver's seat so far. So, Derek, I love the league. I love that it's a league of parity. Kind of like I said earlier, there's some chaos. You don't know what's going to happen week to week. It's interesting. It's really interesting to keep an eye on at this point. Any thoughts or anything you want to add on that one?
Yeah. So, you know, talking about parity, a couple of years back, we had a big trade. And it was the Lions and the Rams. And the Lions get Jared Goff. The Rams get Matt Stafford. And at that time, we were like, oh, okay, well, Jared Goff is just going to be tossed in the dustbin of history, going to go up to Detroit, no one wins up there, blah, 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 blah. The Rams got their, got what they wanted. They got a Super Bowl, you know, went all in, got Stafford. Stafford leads them to a Super Bowl. Well, now we're looking at the other side of this, and the Lions with Jared Goff. Jared Goff looks really good up there in Detroit. Like, he's the type of guy that they need up there. Now the Lions are 5-1. If someone would have told me in my life that we're a third of the way through the season and the Lions have five wins, most of my life I would be laughing. Like, what happened? Did seven teams forfeit? Like, in order to get five wins, they would have to have seven teams forfeit. And I mean, the Packers have been the leader of that division most of my life. Now we're looking at the, you know, the Lions being there. The NFC East is always up for grabs, so they don't ever have a repeat winner. So the Cowboys look good. The Eagles look good. Washington Commanders are right there at 3-3. If Atlanta ever gets their head out of the sand and actually has a change of quarterback, they're probably going to go on a run because Desmond Ridder might be holding them back. I love Desmond Ridder. I loved him when he was in Cincinnati. I liked him when he got drafted. But it doesn't seem like he's the answer right now. The West, the NFC West, you're always going to, you know, the Seahawks are there. They can make a run. The Niners look really good. But as we'll see later, injuries do happen. So, yeah, you're exactly right. We have some big flips. And I love when you can't figure out who's going to win each division or who's going to go to the Super Bowl. Because, you know, this year, Dolphins might be that AFC champion. Who knows?
Who knows? Derek, did you turn on the heat warmers, the seat warmers? I mean, I don't feel, I'm at my desk. Why would I have seat warmers here?
Cause I think, we're talking about the hot seats, right now. So like we said before, we are a third of the way through the season and I just want to do a little check-in. See, I mean, it's not hot. It's a little warm. You know, we're seeing those coils, you know, warm up just a little bit. It's not uncomfortable, but let's take a look at some of the people that are on the hot seat. So Bill Belichick, not on the hot seat. He's always going to be there if he wants to be. But the game is kind of passing him by. He can't seem to replicate the success he had with Tom Brady. I could see him stepping aside and retiring at the end of this year. And so that would leave a position open at the Patriots. Would have to be a completely new Patriots than what most of, well, me or most of our listeners probably have ever had because he's been there for so long. Mike Vrabel, he could be a good head coach candidate for the Patriots. He played there and he knows the Belichick way and could be a nice step in, but he's the head coach of the Tennessee Titans. The Titans have a second round pick in Will Levis, who, I mean, he's not a perfect one for one Ryan Tannehill, but you might want to just bring in a fresh coach, someone who, you know, is more offensive minded. And, you know, Derrick Henry is, I always say that he sooner or later, he's going to slow down. He never does, but, you might, you know, need a fresh start in Tennessee because that division isn't getting easier. It's getting harder. And they're not finding the right level of wins. And then you have some of the NFC guys. So my favorite, Sean Payton, probably not going to be stepping aside this year, probably not going to get fired no matter how many losses he has because the Denver has their pick back this year. So that could be a top five pick for them. And, you know, we could see, I don't think Sean Payton's going anywhere, but Matt Eberflus may. Justin Fields doesn't feel like the answer at quarterback. They're not really doing anything really well when it comes to moving forward. And then you have Frank Reich with the Panthers. Is this guy going to be able to mold Bryce Young into an NFL quarterback? They've scored quite a few points and given up a lot more. And so maybe it's a defensive issue versus an offensive issue. I liked the Panthers at the beginning of the year. you know, anything can happen in the NFC South. But for me, these are just the guys that I'm seeing that are at the bottom of the division. They could work their way back up and not be at the bottom of their division. But right now, I mean, I think the hottest seat right now is Matt Eberflus and Mike Vrabel. I mean, if I'm going to go with the NFC, AFC coach, those are the two that I'm seeing right now. Is there anybody that you would add to that list, Caleb?
I mean, I do think that it's been an interesting season, and I'm curious where everyone ends up landing. I'm not particularly sure if I would say that this is a hot seat, but just more of an interesting one. I think it's worth calling out the fact that the New Orleans Saints kind of promoted Dennis Allen after he had, you know, been underneath Sean Payton for such a long time. And Sean Payton left, but now he's back into coaching. But Dennis Allen was never like fully recruited and committed to the team, it felt like. And after a 7-10 first season and then a 3-3 start to this season, I'm just not going to sit here and say that I love what he's doing. Another one that I think just stands out to me a little bit, in part because the sale didn't go through until late in the offseason, is probably Ron Rivera. I don't think it's probably valid, but I think that it's someone that I've got my eye on of, hey, it's a new ownership. It's not personal. It's not me, or it's not you. It's me. I just want to have someone who I bring in so that the ownership can really feel like they're getting their fingerprints on the coaching staff, if that makes sense. But I like where you're at. I like where you're coming from with the Eberflus and Vrabel picks. I think that they make sense, even though Eberflus has not been there a long time. It's tough to sit there, you know, 3-14 last year and 1-5 this year. It's not smooth for sure.
Yeah, no, I'm agreeing on that one. And, you know, the things could completely change. It's only at 1/3 of the way through. You know, the Broncos could all of a sudden revive the Russell Wilson, and he could ride. Broncos country, let's ride.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So we were talking about teams that are kind of, you know, one win teams, two win teams, zero win teams. I think you have a one win team that you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, I do. And it's one team that I really just am a little bit perplexed about and trying to find out a little bit more about here, really, it seems like, because I'm talking about the Arizona Cardinals. They are 1-5. They do seem, though, that they're being one of the better 1-5 teams in recent memory. Their expected win-loss, when you take a look at their points scored and allowed, has them more as like a 2-4 team. And as far as DVOA puts them, it has them at about 25th. So instead of down where they would potentially be like one of the bottom five teams in the league, it has them up kind of near the middle of the bottom there in 25th. They've just played really interestingly, and I have them as a team that you kind of almost still circle and go, but they got a win over the Dallas Cowboys. The Dallas Cowboys only have two losses. One of them is to the Cardinals, and the other one is against the 49ers, who took care of business against them, let's just say. You know, they traded for Josh Dobbs before the season. He's been decent, but not great. James Conner's now hurt, so they do have some injuries. But they're playing. They're trying to find some of their defensive identity and get some things together there. I don't really have like players that I'm like, oh yes, this player has been standing out and being phenomenal. I think if anything, it's more of a look at all of these things that are happening that are kind of chaotic, and that they're still finding ways to keep progressing. It hasn't been the prettiest. I'm not going to sit here and say I think that they're the best team in football. Clearly not. They are 1-5, but I think that they're a feisty 1-5, a 1-5 with a team that, especially when James Conner was healthy, you wouldn't really want to mess with. I think they're a little bit better at home than they are away, as are most younger teams that are trying to rebuild a little bit. And I'm curious if this is going to be something where when Kyler comes back and they have that spark on offense again, if they can really make this a Kyler's team and do something with him. I don't know if that'll be this year or next year, but I'm very intrigued by what is happening in the desert. Anything you want to add on that one, Derek?
Yeah, so it's clear that Kyler, when he comes back, it's his quarterback position. They're not bringing in somebody for the interim that is going to, he's going to have to fight for, this guy's doing a really good job. Josh Dobbs is doing a good job. He's doing a serviceable job. He's had flashes of great plays, running the ball, stuff like that. This team is always in the game. They just can't close out the game, especially in the early part of this season. That can change. That can be fixed. That's the stuff that, first-time head coaches and younger teams, that kind of stuff happens when you have a young team and when you're going up against a more seasoned veteran team. But young teams turn into veteran teams, and especially if they hang together. And so, I could see the next 2 or 3 years, the Cardinals, moving in the right direction. And we could honestly see the Cardinals in the playoffs again, I would say in the next 3 or 4 years, if they continue that rise.
I like it. I like where you're coming from. What do you got next here, Derek?
Yeah, so this is one I like to call, you mess with the colt and you get the hooves. So this is injuries that have affected the NFL this year. And my biggest one is Anthony Richardson. And that's why I'm calling it the colt, is because he is done for the year. The quarterback for the Indianapolis Colts. Everyone had high hopes for him. He was a Cam Newton type, quarterback draws, can get the ball outside, big frame, you just backyard kind of plays when he was at Florida. And unfortunately, he is not smart in the hits that he takes. And he's a smart guy, don't get me wrong, but you're going to have to learn how to take hits, and you're going to learn when to slide, when to dive forward, when to take that hit. And I don't think he has as a rookie. So he's going to sit on the sideline and let the mustache go ahead and play the rest of the games for Indianapolis. You know, like I said before, we have Aaron Rodgers lost to 4 plays into his Jets career. Justin Field right now has a right hand issue. David Montgomery for the Lions has a rib issue. We saw Lane Johnson go down. Trevor Lawrence has an issue. Jimmy Garoppolo, Christian McCaffrey, Debo Samuel. I mean, these are just the bigger names that are out there on injuries. We're seeing a lot of injuries this year. And I don't know, like, why per se this has been such a big deal. I know injuries are part of the game and we see that every year, but like there's some really big names on this list. And so I don't think we're getting the same kind of games we would be getting if we didn't have to have so much of the injuries. I like Aiden O'Connell as much as the next guy, but Jimmy Garoppolo, it was the guy that was the face of the franchise for the Raiders this last offseason. I'm not sure exactly how many games the Jaguars are going to win without Trevor Lawrence out there. Now, he's probably not going to miss any games. It was a minor issue, but we've seen Joe Burrow come into this season with a calf issue. Didn't look great the first couple of weeks. Looks like he's figured some things out. So, and then we hear a lot of players talk about the turf, the artificial turf that has hurt people. They're racking it up for Aaron Rodgers and his injury. But, there's a lot of guys who get strains and pulls because of the artificial turf. So this is just the NFL this year, but I think we would have a better product if we didn't have the injuries bug hit us so much.
Derek, I don't know if this is your opinion of this, but just thinking about this with the combine and things that we've been seeing, I do feel like we're seeing a lot of players that are, I don't want to say cliche wise, bigger, faster, stronger, but in reality are bigger, faster, and stronger than a lot of players we've seen in the past. Kind of to that point where they're worked out so much that I think when something rolls up on their ankle or, you know, they get hit a certain way that their body isn't really expecting and you can't really train for, that it hampers them. I know we've seen our fair share of knee injuries, concussions. Like, no, it's not just like muscle and skeleton system. You know what I'm trying to say.
I'm not even gonna try it. I'm just gonna like just smile.
You're like,
and
yep,
nod.
You got this, Caleb.
Smile
okay.
And nod.
But it just seems like because players are so ridiculously talented that it seems almost easier for them to get banged up a little bit because they're all so strong. Maybe that, I could be wrong, but I hear what you're saying. So many injuries this year.
There's a lot of injuries. It's just big names that that have injuries, and it could definitely affect the playoff seeding if those last longer.
Indeed. And speaking of the playoff picture, so Derek, let's do a quick rundown of what the playoff picture would be if the season ended today. Currently in the AFC, the Chiefs would have home field. The other division winners would be the Dolphins, Ravens, and Jaguars. And then, partially due to the bye week, the AFC wild cards would go to the Bills, Steelers, and Browns. And that's because the Steelers and Browns are both 3-2 and have not had to play that sixth game yet. They're getting a little bit of a edge there. On the NFC, currently it's the 49ers are the 1 seed. Eagles are in the 2 spot. Lions are 3. All of them are 5-1. So very competitive race over there. And then the Bucks do slide in as the leaders in the NFC South at this time. The wild cards are currently the Cowboys, Seahawks, and Rams. Derek, where do you kind of expect to see this playoff picture change? Obviously, we know of some injuries that have happened. We know of some impacts that have happened during the season. Where do you kind of, if you were going to pick one or two ways, where do you think it's going to impact and shift?
Yeah, so for the AFC, I'm certainly looking at the 6-7 seeds. So what we currently have is 3 teams from the AFC North getting into the playoffs. So I certainly do think that we're going to see at least two teams. I mean, I think that you have the Ravens are in there as a winner of it. And then you have the Bengals or the Steelers in there. But I'm certainly looking at some other teams making a later season push. They always get right around that area. We talked about the Jets previously that could make a playoff push. I think they're, in that area. And, you know, this is going to taste bad. Las Vegas Raiders. If they, they get Garoppolo back and they figured a few things out, I could see them. I mean, they're a 3-win team and the Steelers are a 3-win team as well. So, you know, the Chiefs are beatable. And I can see the Chiefs Dolphins flip back and forth when it comes to the 1 and 2 seed. I think the Chiefs will want that bye, but, you know, they don't look like their normal self. And then when it comes to the NFC, I'm not seeing a whole lot of coin flips there. If Jordan Love figures things out in Green Bay, I could see them taking the seven spot. But for the most part, that's kind of written in pencil. It's written down. It could change, but it's probably not going to change.
So I think it's going to be interesting here, Derek, because I feel like something's going to have to give and something's going to change in here. I'm not sure that I even think that the Ravens win the AFC North, even though they are the current front runner. And do I think that division could get two teams into the playoffs? Yes, but I don't think that they're going to get three. They're going to get too many losses amongst each other,
yeah,
beating each other up for them to get all three teams in. And I'm actually going to steal some of your notes here, Derek, because I think that the Jets and the Texans are teams that I would consider. The Jets are someone who I looked at, you know, before the season and said, yeah, give me the over on the 9.5. And even though Rodgers isn't there, like I said, they're a threat. They're a threat to be able to play you into a close game. And in a close game, anything can happen. Give them the right possession. Give a missed tackle on Garrett Wilson. Give Breece Hall, you know, one good hole to run through. And all of a sudden, the game can shift. And with the Texans, it's just a matter of C.J. Stroud's doing the right thing. You know, maybe if they pick up a couple of other wins in the division, they seem to have the Jaguars number from earlier in the season. So I think that both of them could find a way to potentially sneak into the back end of the playoffs. On the NFC, I'm not going to count the Rams and the fact that, like, they literally, I think, signed three running backs today. And so they're trying to have their running backs do the best version of learning the playbook as fast as Baker Mayfield did from last year. But I also don't know that I trust the Bucks as the 4 seed. I think if I leaned with the Falcons before the season, I would lean saying that I think they'll get in there again. And if you give me someone who goes on a run in the NFC North as a final wild card, potentially, you know, the Vikings have found a way to win a couple in a row. The Packers have had a rough start, but are 2-3. If Jordan Love finds his footing and they get Aaron Jones back healthy, I think someone's going to find a way to take a run at that, or Detroit's probably going to get the 1 seed in the NFC because that division looks so much easier than every other division right now.
Yeah.
So either someone's making a playoff run or Detroit is having home field. And then I don't even know what to do with the NFL anymore. So any closing thoughts on that playoff picture, Derek, before we jump to Thursday Night Football?
No, I think we've covered everything, and we could argue till we're blue in the face, but probably wouldn't be best.
Let's not. I would rather not argue until I'm blue in the face. Teams that might not be blue in the face but could be teal might be the Jacksonville Jaguars. On Thursday Night Football, the Jaguars are going to travel to the Superdome in New Orleans as they will take on the Saints. The Saints do lead the all-time series 5-2. And it is going to be just an intriguing matchup between two South teams trying to find a way to get their footing and either potentially take a division lead or stay in the division lead as things are moving forward. Derek, what is your matchup to watch in this contest?
Yeah, so for me, and this is going to sound a little bit cliche, But this is going to be the Saints versus the Zebras. So the Saints are the highest, have the highest amount of penalties this year. They have been whistled for 55 of them. 12 of them have been declined. And they've given up 406 yards in penalty yards. Most of the time, it's offensive holding and defensive pass interference. So they've had 18 offensive holding calls and 9 pass interference calls. If you are shooting yourself in the foot, the Jaguars will take full advantage of that. Because they are such a holding team, they do love to hug down there in NOLA. This defensive line especially, is going to pressure you. They're going to get in your face. They're going to do their very best to make your quarterback upset and not comfortable. If you are giving them a free first down, if you are pushing yourself from a first and 10 to a first and 15, first and 20, so on the offensive side, you're putting yourself behind the sticks. On the defensive side, you're interfering and you're giving them a free first down. They're going to take advantage of it, and they're going to run the ball. They're going to, it sounds like Trevor Lawrence is going to be healthy for this game, though maybe a little bit limited. He's going to put the ball down the field, and you're going to have a really rough time. So you have to clean up. That is something that you have control over. Whether someone catches the ball or a touchdown is called, and reviewed and stuff like that. Some things are out of your hands, but you holding and you interfering is something that you can control. It's a culture issue, and the Saints need to get that under control.
That makes sense. Makes a lot of sense. Derek, my matchup to watch this week really has to do with the offensive line for the Saints trying to find ways to truly block the opposition here, because I'm looking at the New Orleans Saints tackles in James Hurst and Ryan Ramczyk, who currently this week, Derek, they're both listed as did not practice. Ramczyk actually had a concussion from this past week's game against the Texans. James Hurst had bumped out from guard to tackle and was playing out there, was carted off the field during the game with an injury. I don't know if they're going to go back to Trevor Penning. They had benched him to put him back out there. Landon Young is another tackle they have who did not practice. It's going to be a mess. And not only is it a mess, but they have former first-round picks coming up against them on the pass rush in Josh Allen and Trayvon Walker. I want to see what happens.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a bit of a mess for them in this contest, because they're just really banged up. The last spot that you want to see three players on the injury report is three players on your offensive line that you really thought you had to go out there and one, run block together, and two, protect your quarterback, which we've already seen them have some issues with quarterback injuries as Derek Carr got hurt earlier this season. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be potentially a bit messy, but that's part of why the Texans were able to take care of business against them. And it really stinks for the Saints that they're playing on such a short week, as Allen and Walker are tough to go against at full strength, let alone when your players are not able to practice and are on the injury report. So I'll be keeping an eye on that injury report. If they can't come back, Jaguars might look like the Saxonville Jaguars this week, as they put in a lot of pressure on Carr.
Yeah, I love Trayvon Walker for the Jaguars. I think that We're not seeing it right now, his full upside, but they can get back to Saxonville pretty easily with the talent they have on that defensive staff.
Well, Derek, I believe with that said, it is time to move on to dessert, our Brody Bets. What do you want to tell the folks about our good old Brody Bets?
Yeah, so last week we had some Brody Bets. So for me, I went 2-3. So in order to win, you just take the exact opposite of what I take, and you're going to be positive. So the Oklahoma State Cowboys, I had the over 57. Between them and Kansas, they put up 71. I had over 47.5 for the Chiefs-Bronco game on Thursday night. They put up 27. So I'm not sure how the Broncos stopped the Chiefs at 19. I'm assuming they did it on purpose because of if the Broncos would have just scored 19 points a game, they would have been in the playoffs last year. So I think the Chiefs just kind of rubbed it in our face. And then, go with Michigan every week. My favorite was Michigan versus Indiana with Michigan minus 33.5. They won by 45. So I won that one. My underdog was the Bears going up against the Vikings with 2.5 points. The Vikings beat the Bears by 6. So I missed that. And then... weirdly enough, I don't know why I take these games, but Iowa, Wisconsin, over 36.5. Iowa 15, Wisconsin 6. They only put up 21 points. So interesting.
Thrilling enough, football in the Big Ten. The best, yeah. Most exciting games in the Big Ten conference.
Yeah, I don't know. I should have went under. Caleb was on a bye week last week as his games were all on bye weeks themselves with the Cornhuskers and the Cheesehead both on bye weeks. And then we're just not going to talk about his picks as he didn't choose any of them correctly. And I do feel his pain when it came to his underdog, which is the Chargers +2 over the Cowboys, and the Chargers lose by 3. And so, and his wild card, the 49ers and Browns over 37.5. There was 36 points scored in that game, so he missed it by 2. So, we're just going to say Caleb was in a bye week last week. And now we're going to go to where everyone's playing this week, both the Cowboys, the Broncos, and the Packers, Huskers. Everyone's playing, so we're going to have a full slate. For me, this is West Virginia week. Oklahoma State heads to Coal Country as a 3.5-point underdog, and the over-under being 50. I like what they did last week versus Kansas. West Virginia is a better team than Kansas, I think. But I'm still taking Cowboys +3.5. I think they're going to win outright. I think there's some moxie to these Cowboys. They've got some legs underneath them now. The defense is playing better. So I'm taking my Cowboys +3.5. Let's move over to Nebraska Cornhuskers. Caleb, tell me about your Cornhuskers.
The Cornhuskers, fresh off of the bye, are at home and taking on another team that is actually fresh off of a bye in the Northwestern Wildcats. I don't know what it is. I feel like we typically play Northwestern super close. At least we have in the past. But I'm going to go ahead and go out on a limb here. Nebraska has struggled sometimes to put games away, but we beat Illinois by 13. I think that Illinois... that was on the road. They are a better team than Northwestern is. I think that Nebraska is going to go out, take care of business at home, and stop fumbling the ball away so dang much. I'm going to go ahead and take the minus 11 on this one, as I think that Nebraska will take care of business and just give Northwestern another loss. Plus, Northwestern barely beat Howard a couple weeks ago. So, yeah, that's not a great sign for them.
I don't know what to say about that game. My fingers are crossed for the Cornhuskers as they need something to go their way. We need to get into bowl eligibility, and we need to take care of these games that we know that they can win. So the best part of the week. Is this the best part of the schedule for the NFL is this week for this podcast, and the Broncos are inviting in the Green Bay Packers into our very tall stadium, our stadium at the top of the mountains, as the Packers Broncos are going head to head. And so me and Caleb get to go head to head. So for me, the Broncos are a +1 favorite, and the Packers are, of course, a -1. The Broncos are a +1 underdog. My apologies. And the Packers are the favorite with a -1. I'm taking the Broncos straight up, and Broncos +1. I guess if we tie, I can win that one. Or if you beat me 20-19, I guess I push. So for me, Broncos are going to win this game.
I'm going to just go out and say that we're going to go out there with a little bit of love. And I think that the Packers are going to find a way to go get a dub in Mile High. Give me the Packers -1 in this contest. Derek, I have to tell you, I know that we've been podcasting together for a long time, but I do not have a lot of love as far as the Broncos are concerned, because I just remember the crushing Super Bowl loss against them in Super Bowl 32. And I don't think that this will be a true measure of revenge, but I would like to see my Packers go get this win. Did you know that they've only played 15 games against each other?
Wow. Long-term franchises.
They are actually, the series is tied at 7-7-1. So whoever gets this has bragging rights for at least another 4 years, as they will be ahead in the series.
There you go. This breaks the tie, and I will certainly say an extra long handshake for the winner of this game when we meet up in the next couple of weeks together. Since we're already talking about the AFC West, why don't you tell me about your favorite this week?
So I'm looking in that same division. And I was just really flustered by the lack of performance on the Chargers offensive line. Yes, they were playing the Dallas Cowboys, but they're playing the Chiefs this week. Steve Spagnuolo knows how to dish up a ton of blitz packages, and they have Chris Jones. I'm taking the Chiefs -5.5, as Patrick Mahomes will win this game by at least a touchdown in Arrowhead Stadium.
Yeah, I mean, after what happened with the Chargers on Monday night, I don't know what to say. I really do think that they are a good team, and they have a really great quarterback. I don't know about the Chargers. But I'm going to jump over to my favorite, and I'm just going to go with my bandwagon team, as I think it's the safest bet to try to get a win. So San Francisco -7 headed up to Minnesota with the fighting Kirk Cousins, and who's probably already gotten some boxes, probably already started to pack his stuff, as he's probably not going to be the quarterback of Minnesota next year as his contract is up. But for now, San Francisco -7. At Minnesota, And since we're talking about Minnesota, I'm going to hop over to my underdog because they're in the same division. Somehow, the first or second best team in the NFC is an underdog versus the Baltimore Ravens. So Detroit +3 headed to Baltimore, Maryland to take on the Ravens. You know, I've heard a lot of people say this week that after the Eagles loss and the 49ers loss, that Detroit's the best team in the NFC, and yet they're getting no love as they are headed to Baltimore. So, you know what? I'm just going to take them, and I'm going to cash an easy high five.
Nice. I like it. They don't have Jordan Love, so they're not getting the love this week as they travel to Baltimore. So I'm going to go ahead and go with a game we talked about earlier. I don't think that they're blocking Allen and Walker. Jaguars +1 at the Saints. Give me them as I think that this is a potentially rough one. I do have to ask you this, Derek, because you picked a game against the Vikings, and it is in Minnesota.
Uh-huh.
Are you familiar with the sounding of the horn that they play before the game? And do you know what it's called, or do you know how to enunciate it?
No, I do know what it is. I know I can picture it in my head, but I do not remember what it's called or how to pronounce it.
I believe it's the Yaller horn. So it starts with a GJ, which is totally how you should enunciate those things. But it's basically, I love how it gives an explanation on the Wikipedia page for it of hollering horn or the loud sounding horn. Okay, it's a big loud horn. I don't want to hear it very much. So I hope your 49ers smack the Vikings around a little bit.
Yeah, so in Oklahoma and in the parts down here, when you use the word yaller, it's more along the lines of like, hey, have you eaten or yaller? Are y'all hungry?
Are y'all are coming over later today?
Y'all are coming over later. Yeah, it's a, you normally don't hear that in a horn. So yeah, nice. Completely different than maybe
the things
I need
that happen
to
in Minnesota and the things that happen in Oklahoma are very different from each
exactly.
other.
Exactly.
Well, why don't we go to college football for some wild card games this week, Derek?
Let's do that. Why don't you tell me about the team that one of us has to take every single week?
So, you know, I've already discussed how the most riveting football in the league is in the Big Ten. I'm taking Big Brother as Michigan is going to Michigan State, and they are a 24-point favorite. We keep taking them every week. The points keep getting fairly large, and we just keep ignoring it as someone can take Michigan to win. Derek, I took them this week. I see you eyeing them next week against Purdue at home. Okay, you've got that one. I'll let you have that on the pod next week. But I'm going to take Michigan -24 at Michigan State, as I do not find Michigan State to be terribly impressive, and I think that Michigan will take care of business.
Yeah, Sparty is only good during college basketball season. So, I like that Michigan pick. For me, I was looking at the stats earlier, and I don't understand what this is. So this is Duke going down to Florida State. Florida State is favored by 2 touchdowns, by 14 points. Duke is like the 16th ranked team this year. Pretty good. And, you know, Florida State's a good team, and I've watched a couple of their games. You know, they're a good team this year. I'm not sure they're 14 points better than Duke this year. So my wild card, Duke +14. So, yeah, I go Blue Devils.
I mean, I normally don't think that anyone can outcoach Coach K by 14. Oh, wait, we're still talking about college football.
This is,
and Coach K is retired. Yeah. It'll be fine. It'll be fine.
I think he could probably put, I think he'd probably keep it within 14, and he doesn't know much about football.
That might be true. So for you, we hope that you have enjoyed the time with us on the podcast today. It has been a fun one and a bit of a long one for us. Sometimes we keep it shorter, but this was a fun, good time. And I hope that you enjoyed every one of our segments. I'm going to keep it short and simple. Check out our Linktree, linktr.ee/BrodyTalk. On behalf of Derek, my name is Caleb Walgren. We are signing out. Later, y'all.
Bye, guys.